Hey, Matthew Bauer. Hey, thank you so much for joining us on WTOP in Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Jason. My pleasure to be here.
And yeah, we're talking because you are the director of the new fascinating idea of a documentary. It's called The Other Fellow, a film about all the real men named James Bond, what that must do to their life. It comes out this Friday, February 17th. In theaters, and you can get it on demand. And real quick, something reminder listeners, something you just said. You said right before we hopped on here, you said that you just got a cool Rotten Tomatoes rating.
Yeah, our little film about men named James Bond just got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes from this nation's critics, which is pretty exciting. It might cue your listeners in that there's maybe a little bit more to this men named James Bond documentary than first meets the eye.
Absolutely, but we don't want to spoil it. So feel free to share, you know, as much as you're willing to in this without ruining the, you know, the surprise twist of the doc.
Sure.
And all that. So, but whatever, you know, take it as far as you want to go with it. But yeah, I guess let's start there. So obviously the title comes from, George Lazenby in Her Majesty's Secret Service? Doesn't he say that this never happened to the other fellow in a nod to Connery?
yeah. So my fellow Australian, the only Australian James Bond. So when he became James Bond in 1969, obviously Sean Connery is like the most famous man in the world. At this stage, he's an unknown Australian. And in the first scene of his first film, the girl like runs away from him and drives off, you know, like rather than sleeping with him. And he turns to camera and says, "This never happened to the other fellow." Obviously talking about Sean Connery, you know, the more famous James Bond. And my characters are in the exact same situation. They are the less famous James Bond, living in the shadow of and constantly almost being demeaned by the other more famous James Bond.
Now talk about how you chose, how did you come up with the idea? I mean, did you read about, you know, an article or something about one of these real James Bonds, or were you watching, or was it the opposite? Were you watching one of the Hollywood movies and you were like, hey, this has to be a real person too?
You know what? I honestly don't know. It's one of those ideas. It just came to me and I jumped on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. And before I knew it, I had just messaged a bunch of dudes called James Bond saying, hey, I had this idea for a movie. Is there any interesting stories you have to tell? And look, I thought it was going to be all Aston Martin jokes. And very quickly, they were telling me about, you know, running from the police and running from stalkers and dealing with these kind of cases of like identity theft and confusion that were, yeah, a lot more kind of complex than I was expecting.
So you're saying that when our listeners check out this movie, they're going to realize that it is a blessing and a curse, probably maybe more often a curse to be named James Bond in real life.
It is an oft-repeated line by my characters that it is a blessing and a curse, yes.
Well, and one of the characters says something about that it's you have to, even if it's not a serious case of stalking or police or anything, one of the characters says even just having to endure hear the same jokes and the same comments every time you walk down the street for decades upon decades is a curse in itself.
Yeah, no. I mean, it is constant. And, you know, the Bond, here's the thing. The noise of the James Bond films isn't because everyone's watching Goldfinger every day. The noise of James Bond is just out there constantly. I mean, we're talking about James Bond now on the radio. You know, I always say I'm a big Below Deck fan, you know, where they work on super yachts. They talk about James Bond every episode somewhere. Like they use it as like a verb, you know, and that's just one example. And yeah, so this kind of noise of James Bond just haunts these guys every day.
Absolutely. Well, talk about sort of how it all began. And I know, you know, and sort of your choice to sort of open the documentary in 1952, you know, the Jamaica, the GoldenEye estate, that's fitting. Where, you know, Ian Fleming, British author, comes up with the character of 007 for that first novel, Casino Royale, comes up with the name James Bond. Tell our listeners, I don't think this is a spoiler because it's in the trailer and it's in the beginning of the doc. But yeah, tell us how Ian Fleming came up. It was a real person in Philadelphia where he got the name from, right?
Yeah. So when he was creating this character, he said that, you know, heroes of the time in fiction were called things like, this is the 50s, they were called things like Peregrine Carruthers or Bulldog Drummond or something like that. And he didn't want that because Bond was supposed to be, ironically, this quite like anonymous secret agent. So he wanted the flattest, quietest name he could find. And he looked up and he saw in his bookshelf a book called Birds of the West Indies by the Philadelphia ornithologist James Bond. And he went, that sounds like a really quiet name. And so, as he says, he stole it and used it. But then significantly, he did a TV interview where he told the world's press that he'd stolen this man's name. And of course, when this man and his wife found out about it, they were quite shocked, and they got caught up in their own kind of media storm in the 1960s because of this. And for me, in my film, it's like he is the first one that went through what all of my characters today are going through, and which every James Bond in between has been through for 70 years.
Why did he, forgive me if I missed it, but like, why did Fleming, what caught his eye about this ornithologist in Philadelphia? Like, he wrote what, Birds of the West Indies, but like, why was he reading about this guy?
It wasn't that it caught his eye. It's that he was almost the opposite. He wanted a name that didn't catch the eye, if you know what I mean. He wanted it to sound very anonymous, which obviously now is like quite ironic.
Right.
That's why he picked out the name. He wanted something which, as he said, which is very flat and very quiet. And I think the funny thing about the name James Bond, and which I think he didn't predict, was, you know, James Bond still exists today because the name James Bond is ageless. You know, a name like Bulldog Drummond wouldn't still fly in 2023 as an action hero. So I think he accidentally, when choosing that name, also created a name that would exist forever, you know, as well.
That's true. Bond, just it's like a plain name that'll last. Same Indiana Jones. It's the you're keeping up with the Joneses. There's something about those, you know, just common names that can live on, I guess. So we went really into, like, I guess, sort of that initial main character, I guess, the Philadelphia ornithologist James Bond. But real quick, highlight some of the other James, real life James Bonds that you tackle. There's like, you know, like a museum curator, a theater director, a person in prison, like, you know, highlight a few of them for us.
Yeah. So our four main characters are, firstly, I mean, obviously we wanted guys who appear to be the opposite of what we think James Bond to be. So in your country, we started with a homosexual New York theater director who obviously has to deal with constant jokes about being compared to the world's most famous womanizer. And then in Indiana, we actually found a African-American man who was currently actually in prison awaiting trial for murder, whose name is James Bond. And he obviously complains a lot about being given the whitest name in the world, as he likes to put it. And then we wanted a counterpoint to those characters who kind of hate it. So we went with a Swedish man who was actually the son of a Nazi who wanted to establish a new identity for himself, given his family's history. And over the course of about 60 years has slowly turned himself literally into James Bond. And so he drives around his small, snowy community in Sweden in an Aston Martin, you know, drinking martinis, not at the same time. And he recently also changed his name to James Bond. And so we wanted someone who loved it as well. And then in the film, this is what we're dancing around. There is a fourth mystery Bond who, for reasons which will be clear once you've seen the entirety of the film, it's best to let the viewer discover that story for themselves.
Yes, we will not spoil it here, but you have to see the documentary to see this additional unnamed person that is.
I'll say it's a pretty unbelievable story, and it's why I decided to make the film. So it leads to a final James Bond who only gets introduced in the final seconds of the film. But yes, that particular character is why I kind of went, I am actually going to dedicate a lot of time to telling this story.
And how long did it take to film, to do all the interviews and like whenabouts? I believe it was between what, Skyfall and No Time to Die, in that stretch of years.
We filmed between Skyfall and No Time to Die. So for these guys, sure, there's a lot of James Bond noise all the time, but it does ebb and flow, as they say. And of course, the peak times where this is hardest for these guys is when there's a new Bond film being released, because that's when you have probably 10, 100 times more James Bond noise in the media. than normal. So yeah, we specifically filmed around those times. And so what would happen is, you know, we filmed the New York James Bond when Skyfall came out, for instance. And then, but he said, actually, it's normally in the months leading up to it when he has to deal with, because he's the first James Bond in the New York phone book, Jason.
Oh my gosh.
These calls. And so when Spectre was coming out, we said, just let us know if you start getting calls. And then he got an ad from an online, a phone call, from an online casino in New Jersey saying, we want to cash in on this new Bond film coming out. Can you do an ad for our online casino saying, you know, my name is James Bond. And when I'm in New Jersey, I go to this casino.
Oh my God.
So we would kind of film them as they were kind of experiencing these kind of ramifications of the films coming out.
Oh my gosh, I just can't imagine. These poor people can't escape it, because like you're saying, there's always, every couple of years there's always a new Bond film coming out. They can't even wait for, you know, pop culture to move on, because we never move on from James Bond.
It's inescapable, and it's not just me. I mean, a lot of people in the media go looking for these guys, you know, whether or not they want to do a news story on them. You know, I had one guy in England who's actually a James Bond who was in the British Army, and he actually got a photo with Timothy Dalton because Timothy Dalton was filming near the army base where he was. And I tried to get this guy in the film and he wouldn't respond. And I eventually went to his house where his wife got pretty annoyed at me. But the reason was, is he's been hounded by the press for 30 years because of this photo of him with Timothy Dalton. And so, you know, people go looking for these James Bonds, and they do kind of have to hide in that sense as well.
Wow. It's just an incredible concept. I mean, I can see this doing very well, and it has, right? Didn't it play at Austin Film Festival?
Yeah, it played at Austin Film Festivals. It's played and been very well received at kind of film festivals around the world. And then yeah, this is kind of kicking off its general release this Friday.
That's awesome. Well, I'm always curious. Do you have a personal favorite Bond or Bond movie? Like, is there a certain actor that you're like, it'll always be this actor for me? I know you mentioned Lazenby is, you know, your Australian fellow Australians, but is that your pick, or is it Connery, or who is it for you?
Yeah, Roger Moore is my favorite James Bond, just because he was my first. And I think, as with many things in life, our first always holds a very special place. I'm actually here in San Francisco for the first time, and about to go check out the Golden Gate Bridge, the famous setting of the finale of A View to a Kill. And then probably, look, on Her Majesty's Secret Service, as we talked about before, probably is, if you ask me, the best Bond film. I do feel if it had Sean Connery in it, it would be a perfect Bond film. I'm not sure Lazenby was actually the best James Bond.
It is a great movie, and you're right. If Connery was in there, that would maybe edge towards the top. But
if Connery was in it, it would be a 10 out of 10 film. It's an amazing thought, you know, and you always have this with the Bond films, you know, Pierce Brosnan was meant to be in The Living Daylights. You know, and then oddly, he would have been the one that met that English James Bond guy as well. So there's always all these ways the Bond films could have gone.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned, it's the first one you see as you know, growing up. There's a special place. So for me, that was not to date or underdate myself, but to me, I grew up with Pierce Brosnan. You know, so I picture Bond in the video game and all that. But then as you get older and you go back and double back and you watch all of them, I mean, I think I'm a Connery guy. You think you have to be. But and then Goldfinger is the iconic one with the car and the shaken not stirred and the famous villain and his henchmen and Odd Job and just everything. All Aston Martin, all
Goldfinger. I find the funniest thing I find about Goldfinger, right, is, you know, when people think of James Bond, they think of like the Bahamas and the Caribbean and all these famous James Bond locations. But the most famous James Bond film, Goldfinger, most of it takes place on a horse farm in Kentucky.
Yeah, and golf courses and, you know.
Yeah, it's in a way, I think it's the same with Skyfall and how popular that is. Sometimes the least James Bond-esque James Bond films are people's favorites.
Funny how that works, right? But yes, props to Daniel Craig for wrapping up his stretch. I don't know if it's too late to spoil what happened. I don't know if we can say spoilers. It was what, last summer? Two years ago. I'm glad your movie is keeping it going, and I'm sure they'll recast it and keep it going in some form, even if it's like 008 or whatever they have to do. I'm sure it'll keep going.
No, and funnily enough, our film ends just as No Time to Die is about to premiere. And of course, I would have loved to have then gone and asked all my James Bonds what they thought of the ending of No Time to Die. I think some of them would have been quite pleased.
Do they? Oh, that's you just sparked the final question for me. I don't want to keep you too much longer. You've been really generous, but I asked you, you know, who your favorite Bonds were. But how about all of these, the four people you interviewed? Do they have a favorite Bond movie? Did you get any sort of consensus from them, who almost probably have a love hate relationship with the character now? Do any of them have a consensus on who the best Bond is?
No. A lot of them are quite kind of separated from the films themselves. You know, like our Indiana Black James Bond, you know, he almost very proudly says he's only ever seen like half of one of these movies. Right. And no, they tend to not have a massive interaction with the films themselves. They don't have to deal with the plot of No Time to Die. What they have to deal with is just the noise that this makes in the media. And that's enough for them. No, you'll rarely find a person called James Bond who goes and willingly puts on a James Bond film.
That's probably better. The contrast there is probably better for your movie too. You know, it's this disassociation of, you know, if they were all huge James Bond fans and thought it was great, it wouldn't be as dramatic. But the fact, yeah, the fact that they want to, yeah, disassociate, there's your drama, baby.
It wouldn't work it wouldn't work that well if they all absolutely loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Well, congrats on the film. We invite everyone to check it out. It's hitting theaters in select theater cities February 17th, this Friday. But everyone can find it on demand, right? You just plop a couple bucks.
It is available now to pre-order on Apple TV. It's the easiest place to watch it. But it'll be on a lot of other platforms come Friday as well.
Awesome. Well, Matthew Bauer, director of the documentary The Other Fella. Hey, thanks so much. It's a really cool idea. I appreciate you joining us.
Awesome. Great being here, Jason. Thanks a lot.
All right. Catch you later. Bye. Bye-bye.